This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this episode of The After Show. Things are becoming more optimistic every day, every week, which is really good. Before we jump into today's show, got a lot of stuff to get to, a lot of listener questions, some different ones. Obviously talking about current events, doing the reviews and mentioning some of the partners of the show. We wanted to survey you guys. Now, you guys obviously know that we own three gyms. We do a lot of time on the marketing. We understand our customers really well. And unfortunately, the only thing we really know about you guys is what device you use and where you're from. But we don't know we don't know heaps about who you are. Obviously, with the Instagram and stuff, we have that connection and communication there. But we wanted to know more about you. And the reason, because we just want to be able to give you better content. We want to know what's going well.
Choose the right guests.
Yeah, what are we missing? What do we need to touch more on? Because, you know, you guys are always sending us questions about things that we feel like we haven't or we don't need to cover. And it turns out, oh, wow, lots of people want us to cover this, or maybe we need to go deeper on certain topics. So the only way we're going to ever know that is, besides obviously Instagram DMs and some emails and stuff, is to do a survey. So we'd love your help. We're going to offer five $100 gift vouchers for any of our partners. So you get an opportunity to win one out of five gift vouchers. You can use that with any of our partners. So $100 with Whoop, $100 with RecGen, $100 with Blue Blocks, whoever. So all you have to do is go to themindmuscleproject.com/survey. It really helps us out. Even if you're not doing it for the prize, just be so insightful. So it'll probably take you about 5-10 minutes to get through the survey, depending on how in-depth your answers are. But yeah, we absolutely appreciate anyone that fills out that survey. So link is in the description or the website, themindmuscleproject.com/survey. Cool. Okay, so there was an article that got sent to me I wanted to kick the show off with, and it was, they told me, hey, you know, you should add this to your daily email, but it was quite good. I thought that I would just add it into the after show as we put all things out there. So it was, I can't remember the, I want to say, some media outlet had posted the results of a study, which was it was a 4-week study. And they gave participants a certain amount of money. I think it was like $150 to sign out of Facebook, delete the app, delete Instagram for, I think it was the 4 weeks. So yeah,
so just not use it, not delete your account.
Yeah. So there was obviously a few different groups. There was like a control group. There was, maybe a 2-week loss. Maybe there was 4 weeks, no Instagram. Anyway, so the idea of what they were trying to look for is of these groups of people, if we're measuring different aspects of their happiness and their sense of fulfillment, their productivity, is this one thing that we remove, is it having a massive impact on those things? And the things that they measured was their political views, political polarization. So how strongly they felt about left or right wing politics. I assume this is an American study. I think it was. How their sense of happiness, and their also their social interaction. So, how often they socialized offline versus online.
This obviously, was pre-pandemic.
Yes, this is pre-pandemic, and the results were pretty astounding. Most all people that signed out of Facebook and Instagram and weren't using it for the 4 weeks felt. Firstly, they felt.
So there was three different groups. So one, a control group.
There was definitely two groups. There was a control group and a group that was told not to use the app. I think there might have been a third group where they were half-half. Yep. They only, instead of for 4 weeks of not using it, they only used it for 2 weeks. But I think they spoke about the results between the control group and the people that didn't use the app for 4 weeks. But as a result, people were less politically polarized, so they cared less about politics. They were socializing more offline. So they were meeting, they were going to more social events, and hanging out in bars, restaurants, whatever it might be, doing more meetups. They had a greater sense of happiness. They experienced less perceived stress, just day-to-day stress and anxiety. And the only negative that they said was they were less up-to-date on current events. Now, I was reading the book. I post about it sometimes on my Instagram, The Daily Stoic. It's the every day you get one piece of stoicism from... it's either Epictetus, I think that's how you say his name, Marcus Aurelius, or Seneca, And so it's like a quote from one of their books. And then underneath it, Ryan Holiday, the author, and the other guy who I can't remember his name is, they've basically interpreted that sentence, that paragraph. Because if you've read some of the Stoic philosophy before, it's quite... It can be quite convoluted because it's in different language. It's quite hard to understand. So they kind of help break it down. They use some modern examples. Just a one pager. So I ended up posting one a while ago, which was about, it was something to do with paying attention to certain things and what you allow into your awareness or anything like that. But there was just one particular sentence that stood out to me. And he said something along the lines of, this was the interpretation, I think, of one of Marcus's quotes. It was, is it better, are you serving a better life to pass on lessons of wisdom and knowledge to your children, or is it better to be up to date on the world politics, hourly updates on world politics? And I know people that are so infatuated, so glued, so addicted to the news that they feel a sense of anxiety when they're not up to date. And that quote kind of summed it up in the idea is like, hey, how helpful are you being to yourself if you're constantly staying up to date on the thing? How relevant is it? How important is it that you need to be up to date on these things? When, I would argue that, yeah, there are more important things in life to spend your time on, because a lot of those things, they never end up playing out, right?
Except for the pandemic. That really played out.
That definitely played out. But, you can still even absorb too much news of
of course,
right?
Yeah.
I think everyone has been absorbing less of it now. Mm. Even someone that we know that trains at the gym, that works for one of the biggest news outlets in Australia, and she's on top of the pandemic. She was telling me that over the last few weeks, the most searched terms about COVID has gone dramatically down for the actual facts about the virus itself, and much higher for searches around what are people doing lifestyle-wise, like, well, what are some creative things to cook? What are some workouts to do? As opposed to how many people died? How many people are infected? There's way less of that. Yeah. So I think we're all absorbing less and less of that. And you can probably see already that definitely it's probably made a huge impact on people's mental health.
Yeah, one thing I'll add, and kind of goes back to your surveys, I've been thinking a bit about it, because so much of everyone's work now has gone on to like Zoom and online and stuff like that. And one realization I had was that I think it's a much better swap, because I think what happened before the pandemic was so much of people's social life had gone online into like a worse medium. You've taken all the chats you used to have with other people and they've become like message threads, right? Like group chats and just texting each other. But work had basically stayed in person. So you'd basically force everyone to like keep traveling to work, keep doing all this in-person stuff for work, which, most people don't love as much as their social life.
Yep, yep.
But then 80% of their social life had become texting and WhatsApp and like just different, lower quality platforms. And what I was hoping out of this is that it's a bit of a swap, is that we can start the term like, oh no, like work you can get done online. Work you can get done with video calls and not traveling and not spending all your time. Like, so many of our clients like traveling constantly between cities and this, like just for meetings, but never have the time to like meet up with a friend in person,
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that because people are so like, oh, it's like sucks not seeing people anymore, you're going to come out of this with a bit of a swap.
Mm.
Where it's like, no, like your time is limited for face-to-face. You want to save that for like friends and stuff like that. And work, you want to get that done 90% of the time online when you can.
Yeah.
Save time with it.
It's so true. I really hope it definitely changes. Well, we've spoken about before the major companies around the world that have trialed the 4-day work week instead of the 5-day work week and the increase in productivity that they find. There was a really good podcast that I listened to with Peter Schiff, who is a famous economist. He predicted very accurately the 2008 financial crash, the housing market bubble. And he's been on Joe Rogan, I think, one or two times, but he was on the Mind Pump podcast, which, I listened to, and they're friends of ours, and they were on our show. It was good because, they kind of brought the personal trainer fitness context to it. Peter started talking about, now, if you go and you find this podcast and you listen to it, just be, aware. Peter's a very alarmist sort of person. He's very polarizing. He's very, very harsh. So he's definitely truthful. I don't think he's wrong on many things, but if you do listen to it, is a lot of doom and gloom. But one of the things he talked about kind of more broadly, the idea that capitalism was designed inherently at its core to replace manual human work with automation and machines. And he was making the point. So he used the example of the Jetsons, that cartoon, the Jetsons. I don't know if people will remember that. Maybe our younger listeners won't remember the Jetsons. But anyway, it's like this about a family in the future. And they like fly around in hover cars and all this sort of stuff. And George, I mean, the idea, I think it was made in like the 50s or the 60s. Mm. And at this point, from if you take the 70 years pre-1950, so to 1880, and then you take the post 70 years after 1950, so to today, they were saying that, you know, from 1880 to 1950, the amount of growth and the change in the quality of life was dramatic. I mean, you've gone from outhouses to indoor plumbing. You've gone from like heating, like with wood and fires and stuff, to air conditioning and, you know, central heating and underfloor heating and all this crazy stuff, right? Microwaves, kitchen appliances, ovens. You didn't have any of that stuff in the 1880s. So it's dramatic, dramatic improvement. Medicine, all this stuff. That's not to say there weren't improvements post 1950 to now, but the difference from 1880 to 1950 to 1950 to 2020 is, you know, vastly different by comparison. We haven't improved dramatically that much. If you think about it, he was making the point that life, the quality of life, he was making the argument objectively, the quality of life for most people has actually gone down. There is actually a more dramatic difference now. There has definitely been a dissipation of the middle class. You know, there's way more extreme wealth gaps. And as a result, you know, the people that are really taking advantage of the quality of life is only the very, very tip of the spear in terms of high income earners. And as a result, you know, one of the main issues that, you know, we're kind of facing today is people are working more to own less. And he was making the point that in 1950, a man could, in the household, you know, women didn't have to work. Now that obviously there's a huge movement to get women to work, but he was saying it's because they didn't have to, because on one income, you could support your partner, you could, you know, whether it was the woman working or the man working, they could support, well, at this point, it was probably only the man, but they could support a family, they could have kids, there wasn't college debt, people paid for their cars, people owned their homes, people lived a good life, people had savings.
And they also didn't have one to two kids, they had three to five kids.
Right. They could afford all of that stuff, right? The economy was strong, but now because of, you know, bad debt, interest rates, leverage, bubbles, you know, bad government, all this sort of stuff, what we have is there is no way the average middle class, say American male, can support a family of two kids and his partner on one income. It's just not possible.
Or Australian, doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're copying way more debt than they used to have. So, tremendous amount of college debt. And you need to go to college in America to get a good job. That is the system they've built. They don't. No one owns their cars, so they've leveraged themselves all the way up to bad debt on a car, depreciating asset. No one owns their house, right? Which is, you know, pretty common as well. But that is an asset. But, you know, even now, people can use debt systems to own clothes, to own watches, to own shoes, right? And so he's made this point that now we're working longer hours than ever. Technology has meant that, like you said before, all our socializing has become digital, which is not good. And you're working around the clock, working 7 days a week to own nothing. You don't own your car, you don't own your house, you don't own your clothes, you don't own your shoes, you don't own your gym membership. All this stuff is on credit cards, it's on bad debt. And now, unfortunately, this bubble is going to burst and people that have completely leveraged themselves, have no savings, are paycheck to paycheck, need the revenue to come in, you know, they're going to hurt. They're going to suffer really bad.
Yeah, I'll add, this was just before the pandemic. I was going to post a photo of it, but I didn't want to embarrass the shop. But there was it's a Pilates studio. You know, one of those like fitness Pilates studios, like a bit of fitness and Pilates. And they're like on the front, this is just where I live, they offer Afterpay for your membership.
Mm-hmm.
And how I see it is, I wouldn't take someone at my gym if they had to put the membership on Afterpay. Yeah. I just don't think it's... If you like cannot afford the... I'm not sure what they take. Probably like single session or 1 week's membership, and you're having to like go into some sort of credit line to pay for that week's membership, it's a problem. Mm. You know, I don't think that's like the best way to start off a coaching relationship.
Mm.
I don't think it's like, hey, put it on like the credit card and, you know, we'll help you make the... It's not a business coaching. It's Pilates.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to support them really to make the money back in the next couple of weeks. You're just going to add stress to their lives.
Mm.
So, I don't know what you feel, but I don't think gyms should be taking people if they truly cannot afford the first week's membership.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they can't. And you sent me a really good video about the economy by Ray Dalio. It's one of those animation videos on YouTube. And, you know, having listened to the Peter Schiff thing where he talks about capitalism, because, you know, sorry, the point I was going to make there with that whole thing before my rant was that the idea is that we're not creating a society now. Essentially, what we're trying to do is create more time, more automation for the things that we want to do, which is, like you were bringing up the point, you know, the things we love, training, eating well, hanging out with people, socializing, not having to work all the time. And, you know, we're fortunate to do something that we love to do and we really enjoy what we do. But I'm very aware of the fact that, you know, I could be in this position in the future where I'm not doing stuff I love to do. People feel like there's, you know, they're doing stuff that they're not super stoked about, which is, you know, just kind of a part of life. People find meaning in other ways. But if you make all your life about work, and we're creating a society which, you know, it's hard to get out of, and you don't have time for socializing the things you like, you know, people are miserable. It's no wonder people are more depressed. No wonder more people are anxious, because, yeah, they're chasing their tails and everything. They feel like they've dug themselves into a hole they can't get out of. They're way too over-leveraged, and, you know, they're having to work in something they don't enjoy, which makes it tough. But anyway, to this thing you sent me on the economy, I posted about it, and so many people, by the way, replied back to me. They were saying, I love this.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the best videos on the economy.
I think it has millions of hits.
14 million. Yeah. Yeah.
Which for an economics video is solid, you know.
Yeah, it is.
You know, Pornhub hits 14 million in an afternoon, but it's just not quite the same.
The economics. But anyway, so Ray Dalio, he's like, he owns Bridgewater Capital, which I think is the largest investment firm in the world. Or anyway, it's got,
I'm not sure, but
billions,
it's huge,
and billions of dollars under management, right? Massive. He's widely respected as one of the best investors of all time. So he's like a Warren Buffett, right? Anyway, so he's got this 30-minute video explaining the economy. I think it's just a written script that he reads out, and then an animator's gone and created a thing over the top of it. Anyway, what is kind of what was revealing to me, and I think I messaged you halfway through it, it was saying that the idea, how credit came about, or the way it should work is that when you open a line of credit, right? When you go to the bank and say, you know, give me 100 grand and I'll pay you back in the future. The idea, the way the economy works, you know, how it should work, is you spend that money in the future, that you'll owe in the future, on things that will make you more money. That's how it works. It goes, hey, I don't have the money for this right now, but what I'm going to go do is open a business or buy this piece of machinery or upgrade this piece of technology, which is going to make me more productive and help to grow the economy in the future. So I'll be more than capable of paying it back. I'll pay it back easily. The problem is that what we're doing now is that people are borrowing money for things that don't earn the money.
Like going to a Pilates studio.
Exactly. Or buying clothes, or buying shoes, or buying watches, you know, these things that depreciate. Now, we've had it for cars for a while, but that's fine. It was only restricted to automobiles. Different for houses, right? Because houses are assets, they can generate money. The problem was, obviously, the US was giving people houses, basically, in 2008 for no deposit, and just stupid interest rates, and that's why it didn't work. These people couldn't pay it back, but hopefully they're going to fix that in the future. But anyway, the point is, I was reading that and it just smacked me in the side of the face. It's like, holy shit, we are like borrowing money for things that we have give us no ability to pay them back. And that is why this whole thing is going to collapse. And unfortunately, our buying behaviors, our consumerism is so out of control that I think, yeah, I know so many people that have 50 grand debt. What did you spend it on? Oh, I spent it on a holiday and like some clothes and this like handbag and that sort of thing. And I think to myself, how can you earn it back? You'll never outpace that debt because you'll never catch up with the interest rates and you'll never earn enough money to be able to pay it back. And so we find ourselves in a really tricky position here. I think that now the conversation has moved from, at least in Australia, it's moved from, okay, the health ramifications of this virus, because I don't know if anyone else around the world listening to this has paid attention to the situation in Australia, but essentially we've flattened the curve, the cases. So say we're going to end up with, I don't know, 100,000 cases or whatever, we may still end up with 100,000 cases, but it might not be over 2 months, it might be over a year, because it's just such a slow growth at the moment. It's really flattened out, which is great. But definitely the conversation has switched over to now, okay, how can we reopen? When a business is going to come back, what stages have they lifted? And that's, I think, when the interest in the economy has really grown, because now it's like, okay, the healthcare is over, hopefully we're going to take measures in the future to prevent the health stuff, but where are we going to be in terms of our jobs? Where are we going to be in our businesses? How am I going to make money? Are we going to be in a recession, depression? Are we going to be worse at deleveraging? So just figuring out all that stuff, I think, is now the conversation.
Yeah, I think if there's ever time to be excited about it, I think it's now. But I do think there's going to be some long-lasting changes. I think even for ourselves, you know, something like a pandemic, it reminds you, hey, it's like it's good to have savings.
Yeah.
You know, crazy shit can happen. And sometimes you just, it hasn't happened in your lifetime, so you never see it. But someone like this reminds you, like, fuck, you know, stuff that's outside of your sphere of what's possible does occasionally happen.
Mm. Well, that's how good economy works, is Peter Schiff was saying, is like, good economics is having savings.
Yeah.
It's having cash reserves for when this stuff happens. He said, you know, when people went into a depression in America, went into a depression in the 1930s, the people were giving the government money because they had the cash reserves. They could survive months, you know, on their savings because, you know, inflation wasn't crazy. The government just put up their tax rates to fund the war efforts, but it came from the people because they had the money. There's no way the government can get money off the people now. Like, you get off money off the really rich and tax them, which is, you know, part of the plan. But yeah, people don't have any savings. They can't last very long. So good economics, believe whatever you've believed over the last, you know, few years, but having cash reserves, having savings for your personal life and your business is very important.
Yeah, I'll even say for gyms, I reckon it's really sad that I see gyms that couldn't even pay their staff like 1 or 2 weeks after the pandemic happened.
Mm.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's not like the pandemic cost you any money. It just stopped you from generating your clients' revenue. But it wasn't like, oh, I had to pay this like $50,000 bill to, like,
right,
I don't know, improve my health of my client. Nothing happened.
Yeah. There was no new cost.
But gyms, like, I can't pay staff, you know, next week.
Yeah.
You know, because they're obviously just week to week, which is pretty crazy. And then really good businesses like Lululemon are like, sweet, we're paying all our staff for the next 6 weeks, no questions asked.
Is that what they did?
Yeah. Wow. They're still paying them. Wow. All their staff.
For nothing.
Not working.
Wow.
I think they can give them some roles. And Apple is the same. Closed all their stores, still paying all the staff. So, you know, I don't know how much their payroll is, but they would have had a lot of money in savings.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, but to switch gears, I've got a few interesting insights from... I'm now coming up to... Tomorrow will be 2 weeks with Siggy.
Fuck, time flies.
And I'll tell you one interesting one is that, you know, particularly I think a lot of people got this realization when they did CrossFit, was I had this big regret. It's like, oh, because I played this sport, I got this like crazy dysfunction.
Mm, that was me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's everyone, right? I'm like, oh, because of rugby, I got this in my shoulders and this. And one thing I think I've noticed with Siggy is that no matter what you do, you end up with some dysfunction. And I think we had this like weird thing that like hunter-gatherers had no dysfunction.
Mm.
And, you know, he's out. We took him to this chiro physio and was looking at him. And one thing she pointed out is just that his head is always turned to the left. So, he just always looks to the left. And she was like, probably in the womb, his head was just kind of stuck to the left. And now he's come out and he's just continued to always be to the left. And we're like experimenting with it, and we look, and like, you know, you can feel when you put his hand on his neck, like he's much tighter in his like kind of right trap than he is on his left trap. Mm-hmm. And he just like feels uncomfortable turning to the right. He always switches it back over to the left.
Right.
I was like, this kid is like 8 days old.
Yeah.
And he's already got some like neck dysfunction that, you know, he obviously can't jump into training because he can't do anything. But if he did, he would probably, you know, worsen this dysfunction.
But is that I would imagine that's pretty common though, right?
I think it's really common. Yeah. Because they come out with like all sorts of dysfunctions. They said, you know, their feet are turned in and this and that, because they're like, you know, coming out of the womb. But it just reminded me that no matter what you do, you end up with crazy dysfunction.
But won't it self-correct?
Some of the things get better, but a lot of them, they say, yeah, that's how it carries on, you know, if unless you kind of make a point of trying to correct it.
Mm.
So a lot of dysfunctions come from super early. So even like when we
this
had...
This early though?
Well, it's even how they were saying...
But it's not even walking. It's not even putting pressure on his knees and his ankles.
Yeah,
or...
sometimes if it really struggles, then you get it corrected. But... Yeah, people's dysfunction can carry on. Like, remember when we even had the breathing expert on, Pat McCowan? He was saying that, you know, you can just get a cold. Like, kids get cold when they're between 0 and 1, 2 years old. And that develops a lifetime of mouth breathing.
Yeah.
Because their nose gets blocked and then they develop the habit and nobody ever corrects them. Which I thought was interesting. But it also reminds me that no matter what you do, when you come into training, your job is just to fix the dysfunctions that you've had. That is like kind of the whole role of training. And no matter if you just like played Call of Duty or you like were a lead swimmer, you come in with, you know, some bad stuff.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that there's definitely a component to, I think the problem is the mentality that you'll be able to fix your dysfunctions and become perfectly aligned. No, I don't think that's true. I don't think it's impossible. I've heard a good example of like the, of like your shoes, right? So when you put your feet into shoes that don't fit, you end up with fucked up feet, right? Which is most of us. Everyone can look down at their toes unless you wore barefoot your whole life. You never wore a pair of shoes that didn't fit properly or weren't the shape of the human foot. Your toes are going to be a little bit squished, right? No one's toes are perfect. I look at my fucking pinky toes. They don't even touch the ground, right? They're floating a good half a centimeter off the ground. And that's just because for my whole life, I was just in tight shoes, pointy shoes, pointy school shoes, you know, your Converse. I loved Converse. It's all the shoes I wore. You know, I played football. I had boots, you know, all this sort of stuff. So my feet were being compressed all the time. And now the best thing I can do is just correct it as much as possible. But it's at a point where I'm aware of it. I'm working on it. I'm strengthening stuff. But it doesn't hold me back in everyday life. And I think that some people come in with the mentality of like, hey, I'm going to be able to fix this thing. Well, you're not going to be able to fix this thing. What you can do is just slow and prevent as much as possible this dysfunction from interrupting the stuff that you want to do with your life. Because, you know, you made the example of someone playing a lot of video games. They still want to play a shitload of video games. Right? So your job as a personal trainer or as the person doing that thing is just to kind of correct as many of those imbalances that it causes with the expectation that you're just trying to keep yourself you know, from future harm or from any sort of current pain, get yourself out of that and strengthen your body as much as possible. And to be honest, you're probably never going to have your head stacked perfectly on top of your shoulders. Mm. You're never going to have the perfect posture, but because you love doing this thing and you want to keep doing it, we're just going to try and find a way so that you don't end up destroying your body in the process. And I think, you know, with that, obviously the example of Ziggy is like, yeah, like now you're setting him up to kind of be aware of these things and kind of help him out and stuff. But like, hey, you know, in the future, he might have, it might not be perfect.
He's definitely
from left
not,
to right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like those are just some things that end up happening. And that's just part of being unique. You just have these things.
Yeah. And you know, I've heard when they like dig up skeletons of hunter-gatherer areas, they find like crazy, like chronic injuries.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they were perfect. And one more insight I'll have, and I think this is one that no one tells you when you do have a kid, and I think it's probably been one of the most interesting, is that whole portion of your life, you probably don't really think about it, but you can't remember it at all. So you live this like whole, you know, section of your life and you just have like zero memories of it. You kind of pretend it doesn't really exist. You always think back, oh, like, you know, when I first started living at like 5 years old, 4 years old, but you have this whole section before that.
Like pre long-term memory.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know. I guess he has short-term memory. Yeah. I guess no long-term memory. Yeah. It's a good point. So, and one of the coolest things you get when you have a kid is you basically discover that whole time you had. So you like look at it and you kind of presume, oh, it's like probably exactly the same with my parents. And you're like, oh, I can't believe like I was doing this. Like, wow, they like were always cleaning my balls and my penis and this, and I probably peed on them. Like you literally discover what the first few years, I think particularly if you have the same gender, maybe that you are, it's even more so. But one of the coolest things, and no one really told me this beforehand, but you discover what your first 3 years life. It's kind of like watching, you know, a slow movie of, you know, 80, 90% similar to what things were like when you were young,
yeah,
which you just had no insight of before.
Yeah. And it's very, a lot of sleeping.
Yeah.
A lot of sucking on nipples.
It's a lazy time, but you realize how much support you got in the early times. You know, people are like, oh, you know, I did it all myself. When I look at this now, like, you definitely did not. You definitely did not do the first couple of years at least on your own.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. Just to round out that point before is, you know, about the kind of being molded to your external environment, like your feet being an obvious example, you know, a chair being an obvious example, your body is molding to your external shapes. There's this one thing I was trying to research it so I could get exact on the definitions. And so this is as close as I got, but there's a common fallacy amongst humans called the naturalistic fallacy. And I think it's especially pertinent in the fitness industry with people wanting to do things the most natural way possible, you know, assuming that the natural way is the absolute best way. And anyway, this fallacy is the idea that people think that, the most natural way to do something means that it will be the best for you, the healthiest way or the most right way. And it's definitely not always true. You know, if I was to give the example of, you know, getting into a car crash or something and, you know, you think, okay, the nature will heal me. So I'll go use like plant medicines and I'll lie in the sun. I'll let things, you know, heal my injuries because it's the most natural way to do it. I don't want any, you know, Western, you know, I don't want, you know, metal and surgery and, you know, all these drugs because it's not natural. You know, you would end up fucked up, you know, if you didn't heal properly, if you get surgery from a car injury, you end up with broken bones that didn't heal properly and all this sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, so, no one's saying like more sunshine is going to be the cure to COVID.
No, exactly. But, you know, these things, you know, obviously going back to some nature is good and it's important stuff, but I just wanted to bring it up with people that I think that, you know, it's a pretty common argument that gets thrown out there in the fitness world is like, oh, well, it's not the natural way that we did things. It's not the natural way that we do these things. wake the fuck up. You know, we're in 2020. You know, we got phones, we got TVs. You know, we're talking to you through the internet right now. Like, things are never going to go back the way that they were. And so constantly feeling the chronic stress and the long-term stress of like, oh, this isn't natural. This isn't a proper way to do this. You know, is just only going to be a detriment to you. Instead, it's best to kind of accept how things are and work your way around it. Most easy example to think about it that I was thinking about is the context of supplements. You know, one time I was coaching someone, it's back when I used to coach people individually, and you know, we're talking about a bunch of different things in his training, and then we got into the nutrition topic and I laid out all the supplements he should be taking with his training. This is someone who was competing in CrossFit, and he goes, why don't I get why I need to take all these supplements? Because, you know, it just doesn't seem very natural. Like, why can't I just have the food? I'm like, because you're doing all the food. But remember, the training you're doing now is also not natural. Putting a barbell, putting all this load on your back, squatting it for reps and sets and tempos, and like, and doing pull-ups and using all this, you know, this strange equipment, this is also not natural. So how can you expect that you're going to bring, you know, natural nutrition and nutrition protocols to an unnatural sort of stimulus? So I was sort of just making the point that, like, hey, this is just how we adapt. These are just the things that we've come up and changed with. Because, you know, if you're against supplements because they're not natural, like, I feel like you should just go live out in the bush. You should just go, like, you know, fend for yourself as a hunter-gatherer, because these are the tools and things we've created to help us get through modern society. We don't get sun. That's the fact. That's why I created the vitamin D supplement. That's how it came about, because it was like, oh, we're chronically low on vitamin D. The truth is, you go, okay, well, the natural way to get vitamin D, we'll go stand in the sun. Okay, if you can, you know, happily sit here right now and raise your hand and say, you know, I get an hour of sun every day at the right time, you know, 7 days a week, and I haven't missed it for years, and my vitamin D levels are full, like, good on you. But
no, but it's
not even my hands raised.
It's even beyond that, because most vitamin D deficiency comes from people that have, like, darker skin that live in an area where only, you know, much paler people would have been.
There you go.
It's like they were saying that, I don't know if you saw, but the Somalians, like, this, you know, they're super black and they live in Denmark, and they've got really high rates of COVID-19 over there at the moment.
In Denmark.
Yeah. And they're hypothesizing that low vitamin D makes you more susceptible. Yeah. And they're all, you know, very deficient in vitamin D.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, you know, transporting, you know, large populations of people all around the world where their ancestors didn't grow up is also an unnatural thing. So it's like, you know, we need to take advantage of the tools that we've created to combat all the unnatural stuff we do in society, because we realize now it's a part of our culture and we're not changing it, right? Unless you want to go back and, like I said, live in the bush. So, don't know why that was so important to me today, but I felt like it was. Anyway, let's before we move on to some listener questions, speaking of, you know, nutrition protocols and figuring out the right stuff, you know, we had a chat, or we've been working with the company Working Against Gravity for nutrition coaching. And, you know, we made the point that, I think I was talking about it with Ev. She was saying that she was getting really upset with people going out online and saying, hey, COVID-19 is not a weight loss contest. And, you know, I think that what's happening right now is that...
So, what do you mean?
So, this fitness influencer, she wasn't a fitness influencer. She's kind of like an Instagram influencer, but not necessarily in the fitness world. I think she might do a little bit of working out, but she's got a big following.
Yeah.
And she was just, you know, just a general personality that people like to follow online. She was saying, you know, COVID is, isolation, lockdown is not a weight loss contest, because obviously what's become very popular right now is people are working out and they're working on their nutrition and stuff. And this girl's gone against it and gone, you know, stop putting pressure on yourself to have to work out and focus on your nutrition in lockdown. You know, this is just a time to chill and survive. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you mean? This is a great time to be working on your nutrition. This is a great time to work on your health and fitness if you've been neglecting it. This is a great remedy to all the stress that people are feeling. And for you to go out there and publicly say, with hundreds of thousands of followers, to stop doing healthy things for your body and just survive. What do you mean just survive? We're surviving right now. I'm surviving better than you if I'm working out, if I'm eating good. Like, you can't survive any harder than just being indoors. Like, it's not something, there's not like some action you can take to be a better survivor than someone else. No, you should be working out. You should be healthy. You should turn a lockdown into a game to improve aspects of your health. Like, how many people have gone, man, I took, you know, spending social time for granted. How many people are like, wow, I'm spending way more time with my kids. This is awesome. I totally took it for granted. You know, I'm helping homeschool them. I'm helping educate them. You know, I'm spending more time with my partner. We're connecting on different things. Like, all this really awesome stuff, you can transfer that over into nutrition. I think nutrition is a huge one that people are realizing, because everyone's having to cook from home and people are like, oh shit, I don't know how to cook, or like, I didn't realize that, wow, I really was under eating protein, or wow, I was really over eating processed foods. I feel way better. And so I would encourage anyone that, you know, obviously still in a strong position financially to invest in coaching. This is the time to invest in nutrition coaching, because now you have the least amount of barriers blocking your routine.
I'll tell you a fact. I think that the number one thing that gets in the way of when people start nutrition coaching, or they're just trying to follow any diet, the biggest thing that gets in the way with it is commuting.
Yes.
Any sort of travel. And that goes from the extreme of having just to go to work 20 minutes. And then the most extreme is like, I had to fly around the country or to overseas. You know, that gets in the way of your nutrition the most. Yeah. No one that's like, hey, I'm like country hopping right now is like, my diet's been perfect. Nobody. It's a train wreck, right?
Yeah.
And someone's like, hey, I was at home all day. It's generally like, oh, you know, I ate really good food all day. So if you were ever going to work on nutrition, now is the, it's the easiest time to just make good on the promise you're making to yourself when you start something like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when we've had crazy amounts of travel because we're like doing something with a gym or setting up a gym, that's when our nutrition is the worst and we have the most trouble following some sort of plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when we have so obviously worked with so many clients, and this is like one of the biggest hurdles they face is sticking to good nutrition. Because the problem is that they don't get an opportunity because, you know, they're coming to us in the chaos of their lives and we're having to kind of work on the easiest things that we can do, which, you know, for months might just be, hey, we're just trying to get enough water here. We're trying to show up to training. We're trying to get a bit more sleep. So we don't even talk about protein macros yet because, you know, there's so much more low-hanging fruit we need to pick first before we can go after that sort of stuff. But now we're in this unique opportunity where all those barriers are removed. We can set up some habits so that when the chaos comes back, it is habitual. Mm. So what that means is like for you and me, when we go traveling, there's like certain things that are so habitual with us that we always get them done. Like we wake up and the first thing we're doing when we're traveling on one of our podcast tours is we're standing there drinking 3 or 4 glasses of water talking about the day because it's so habitual for us. We're like, okay, let's go and get a high protein breakfast. Yep. You know, you and I are not looking for cereal and milk. You know, we're going out, we're trying to get bacon and eggs or something like that, right? Or like a green smoothie or some protein bars, because you and I know we're like, okay, we need to start the day off with protein. It's the most important macronutrient. So just stuff like that, if you can, it seems for us right now and for those of you listening who do this all the time, it just seems so normal. Well, this is the chance for you to do something like that. So whether you choose to do it with nutrition coaching, obviously it's way easier because you just get like an expert helping you, or you just want to do it yourself, like it's a perfect opportunity. If you want to do it with nutrition coaching, this is who we recommend. The best thing is obviously the app, having a nutrition app that you can do all the communication with your coach through, set up all your habits, it connects with MyFitnessPal. You know, they've just completely nailed it here. Workingagainstgravity.com, if you guys sign up, use the code MMP50. That's going to get you $50 off your first month of coaching. We had a D on 2 weeks ago. That was obviously fantastic as well. So yeah, definitely check that out. Okay, listen to questions. Let's jump into it.
Okay, first one, Angie Verzaletti, and you asked this last week, and we're getting to it after the live show. I'm someone who has really flat feet, so do I, and needs to wear orthotics, so I would love to hear more about ways to improve functionality, movement, and strength for compound lifts, squats, and deadlifts. My knees and ankles aren't fantastic from my feet, so it would be great if you could shred...
shred some light.
We will shred some insight on ways I can improve these areas. I focus on lots of stretching to increase mobility, but would like to know more to work on conditioning.
Mm.
Good question.
Is a good question.
Yeah. What I would start with, because we've both had flat feet, I have been going with orthotics in and out, trying that sort of stuff since I was around 15, 16. And I've had like issues from like shin splints since I like really started playing rugby a lot from like 17, 16. So I've struggled with it for a very long period of time. What I would question straight away is just some of the language you've used in the question here. So, straight away, stuff like I need to wear orthotics, I would question. I don't think anyone like needs to wear it. You definitely might have a need for it, but I don't think there is any type of foot that, unless it's maybe an extreme case in general, you are just like guaranteed to need orthotics.
Yeah.
You know, for most people, that's just not like a permanent life need that you need. And also just like, yeah, your knees and ankles aren't fantastic. I'm not sure exactly what you mean there, but...
Like, are they injured, or are they just dysfunctional? Like, do they crack a lot, or are they stiff, are they tight?
Because I think you just got a bit of a negative view about some parts of your body here that are not true. You know, you can just improve them when you spend some time on it.
Yeah.
But to start, I think, it's working on your feet is something I definitely should have done much earlier if you come into it something like this. I think the number one thing to realize is just I would stress so much less, and we've heard this so many times on the show, about just like how your foot looks. Just like, oh, this foot looks so flat.
Right.
That is not that big of a deal. Particularly in like some cultures, that like a lot of Africans have like crazy flat feet. When I was back in the West Indies where my mom's from, they call it island feet because you don't wear shoes, right? So their feet are just like big and flat and they fall on the floor. Black people are really athletic. They're good at running.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as they actually start moving, their foot creates awesome shapes on the ground. But when they just stand flat, yeah, it's a really flat foot.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're like slower and less athletic than people with high arches.
Yeah,
so I would stress so much less just about like the way your foot looks. And it's honestly unlikely you're really going to change the way your foot looks very much. You know, I've worked on it so much. I think my footprint is nearly exactly the same, you know, when I'm standing on the ground. But you can work on the strength and movement of your feet, which is where I would start.
Yeah, I think that, you know, ankles and knees are dysfunctional ankles and knees, whatever the dysfunction may be. You know, obviously the most extreme cases being like pain and restriction, usually will have some positive effect by fixing your feet. Obviously your feet are the first connection to the earth and so, or your environment. And so strengthening them, making a stronger connection there is going to dramatically improve everything else upstream. Just in the same way that when you do a handstand and you get stronger wrists and stronger fingers and, you know, the intrinsic muscles inside of, you know, your hands and your fingers and your knuckles and your wrists, it's going to improve your elbows and your shoulders. You know, if you have weak hands, if you have weak wrists, it's going to be really hard to do a handstand no matter how strong your elbows and your shoulders are. It's just, it's the first point of contact. So it all works together. So I think that focusing primarily on strengthening your feet has just so much benefit and so much carryover. Now, the most basic thing you can do and what you can start with is trying to not wear shoes as much as possible, especially now in the lockdown and stuff. You should not put shoes on unless you've got to go outside. And then when you do make the choice to put on shoes, is choosing something that is more flat. So right now, Raf's wearing Vivos, which is like obviously kind of seems to be the gold standard right now in terms of kind of minimal shoes. They've got the the most natural shape for the human foot. And, you know, I don't think anyone that's ever worn a pair of them complains about, you know, them not being minimalist enough.
Yeah.
The only complaint is they're just overpriced.
Yeah.
And then I'm wearing like Vans. And so Vans, yeah, they're not as good of the shape of the human foot, but my toes are pretty squished anyway. But they're very flat. So when you put them on, like there's no heel raise, like there's no extra cushioning. They're just like super flat because, you know, they're made for skating. And skating, like you need minimal stuff. You need a bit of protection from landing, but you can't have all this rubber squishiness like messing with your, you know, you want to be able to kickflip and pop shove and do all these different skills. You want like as minimal contact as possible. You want to be like stuck to the board. So all this, so the footwear is huge. Outside of that, there is definitely strengthening stuff you can do. Like doesn't, like Raf said, it doesn't matter what your feet look like. If you can't do like one single leg calf raise, you know, if you can't do 10 reps calf raises, you know, on the floor with your feet open, like that's just weakness.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how beautiful your feet look. Someone with perfect arches and splayed out toes, if they can't do 10 calf raises, they got weak feet. That's more of a problem than dysfunctional looking feet. So working on the strengthening stuff of your feet. Now, there's obviously tons of different drills and stuff you can do. The easiest place to go would just go to our podcast and type in Running Lab or Tim Branston. And you will find two interviews we did with who I think is one of the best experts in feet and foot strengthening. And there's plenty of stuff in there you can do to start on a program to strengthen your feet.
Yeah, and the only caveats I would add is, so I've had orthotics a lot, and Tim's actually given me orthotics. The times that I did find it really useful were for heavy weightlifting. Because if, you know, if you're just starting to work on your feet, you're not going to get them good enough if you really struggle with it to like land with a nice arch at the bottom of a snatch.
Right.
It's unlikely. Yeah. And it can prevent you if you're going heavy, like from getting injuries. And then if you are doing a serious amount of running for a race, you're already in like a bit of discomfort, it will potentially help you get through the race. But it's just not a long, it's not a long-term strategy, I don't think, to improving it.
Yeah.
Cool. You have the next questions.
Oh, I got them?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, so the next question we got is from, which one do we want to go? Okay, we'll go from B_Bernie. How do I not lose muscle mass when only left with body weight training? Yeah, so I think obviously a question on everyone's mind right now. I think there's two parts of it. There's a nutritional component to it, and then obviously an exercise component to it. Now, there's obviously there's definitely two types of people. There's guys and girls. Girls will lose muscle mass faster than guys just because of testosterone. But it doesn't mean that you can't do everything in your power and proactively to maintain as much muscle mass as possible. And then, you know, to be honest, some girls just hold muscle really well, and some guys lose muscle like myself really fast. Over the years, having just done more and more training, my body holds on to muscle mass better, thank God. But yeah, I mean, when I first started weight training, if I took a week off, like, I would lose all my gains, like, so quickly. But, you know, having done it for over a decade now, you know, my body's becoming, it's spent half my life, you know, weight training now. It's more and more used to this kind of load and this kind of muscle mass. So it sticks around a lot more. As Matt Bartholomew said, strength is loyal. But, you know, for body weight training specifically, you know, you do have to find creative ways to load the different muscles and joints in a way that stimulates the muscles to not necessarily grow, but maintain. It's very easy to maintain. It's hard to grow. So the things you want to focus on, the big one is obviously frequency. So hitting your body part, you know, you might hit some body parts once to twice a week, maybe. You can hit body parts, I'd say, close to every day.
Yeah, because, you know, frequency and intensity are the two levers.
Yeah.
You know, most people are pulling in the gym. If you go crazy on intensity, you might work chest once a week.
Yeah.
If your intensity is way down because it's light, because if you're strong and it's body weight, then it's easy for you, right?
Yeah.
Easy. You need to go ham on the frequency.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing that's also going to be neglected from people is isometrics. You know, one aspect of, you know, being able to train very frequently, but also, you know, create intensity with just your body weight is being able to use not just concentric and eccentric, so positive and negative muscle contractions, but isometric contractions as well. And that's just a great way to not overdo your training because, you know, if you're thinking, all right, chest, push-ups, that's a lot of push-ups. Mm. But you can, you know, mix things up by just doing plank holds, you know, midway down, at the top, at the bottom, and just do a whole day of those sorts of holds. You're still stimulating the muscles enough to grow. The guys in the Olympics, the gymnasts, they do so much isometric holds. Have you seen the size of their arms and their shoulders? Enormous. Isometric work still grows muscle tissue. So I think it's definitely just an unsexy, you know, way to do a rep. Isometric, just not that popular, but it's very, right now, super effective. Wall sits.
Yeah, I've even seen guys you know, maintain their top end strength with no equipment, do stuff like isometric deadlifts. So, like, you know, pull a strap underneath their feet, set up for a deadlift.
And then Eugene's big on that.
Pull on the strap as hard as you can. And then you're generating as much force as you do on a 1RM deadlift.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Check out our coach, Eugene Tier, who we had last week. He's got a lot of good stuff out there that you can do to keep generating that. But yeah, train frequently. Try and bring as much intensity as possible because, you know, with your body weight only, it's not going to be that much. And then try not to overdo certain movement patterns, and you can do that by mixing in some isometrics. Cool. So next question that we got here is, well, this one's a tough one, but yeah, compound_13 asks how to stop comparing current self to life before lockdown.
I think, well, how this has played out more for me and what I've seen other people, I'm not exactly sure what you're getting at, but is comparing like the amount of maybe training or lifestyle you were doing before and then everything you do now, it's like not quite as good because maybe your exercise selection was like more on point or like your, you know, even just like your training cycle was actually well structured then. And now it's, you know, it's probably not well structured, right? It's
yeah.
chaotic.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you compare it to then, you're always going to feel like it's not as good. You just need to completely draw a line in the sand, move on, and more compare yourself, I think, to yesterday. Hey, am I doing better than I was when this pandemic first started? You know, when I first went to lockdown and try and start making gains along that. Hey, I've like improved all these five things since the lockdown started. That's sick. Whereas, yeah, if you're comparing it to like, oh, back then I was going like heavy back squats. I felt so drained. I don't get that feeling anymore. Yeah, it's probably not going to live up to that.
For sure. Yeah, I look at it more on a more macro zoomed out level, and I look at it more from the standpoint of like, okay, what are the things, regardless of the results here, like what are the disciplines and what do I want to maintain in terms of, you know, who I am and what I do during this lockdown? And one of those things is, you know, I want to be productive and disciplined. And that means doing a certain amount of things every day. It doesn't matter if it's training in the gym or weight training. It's training. It's committing to something. And that's showing myself that I'm still the same person pre-lockdown. I'm still disciplined. Last thing I want to do is go, oh, well, you know, I can't do the barbell training, so I'm just not going to train at all. Well, now you're a less disciplined person than you were pre-lockdown. And that's a worse person. That's someone who's just lazy. And that's what so for me, that doesn't matter. What it is instead is it's committing to something and then just sticking to that. You know, if I want to read a chapter a day, then it's committing to that. It's having the discipline to commit to that thing. If I want to learn something new, if I want to work on, you know, mobility or handstands or stretching, it's committing to those things and being disciplined about it. And so just maintaining that same person, that same work ethic, that same sense of self, I think is extremely motivating. And I think it's one thing that most people aren't zooming out enough. They're too zoomed in on how different their life was pre-lockdown. Zoom out more and just think about, okay, what kind of person was I? Was I, you know, a calm, rational person that didn't make stupid decisions or post crap online or, you know, get angry at my spouse because I'm around them too much? You know, you have to bring those same core disciplines and be that same person during this state. You know, I think it's really testing everyone about who they are and, you know, what they can put up with. And everyone's going through tough times. You know, when life was easy, you know, you didn't have to really challenge any of your ideas about who you are and how disciplined you are. But now, you know, we're being faced with that challenge. So I think everyone is just finding different ways to kind of step up. I mean, you've had a kid during this thing, you know, you watching you having to handle that. And then the transition online with the businesses and stuff like that's, you know, you're finding out, okay, what am I really made of? Am I cut out to do this sort of stuff? You know, how disciplined am I? And so just stuff like that, I think is just kind of important. And you really want to be able to come out of this and prove to yourself, like, hey, even through the worst circumstances or the most, you know, the hardest times, you know, I held up strong. I got through this because now whatever comes after this, you know, it'll be easier for sure. Cool. The thing that we're going to call out for listener questions is probably one more in there, but instead I want to talk about, you know, speaking about training specifically. We've always talked about our coaches using True Coach app and how it's been really good. One thing that we're doing this week is we're moving all of our client communication over to True Coach. So True Coach has an app called True Coach Connect, and it's basically just their messaging platform. It's just like Messenger. But imagine that you just created an entire app now, which has all the same strength and functionality as WhatsApp or Messenger or Slack, but you just make it for training. And that's what True Coach Connect is, which is why I really love it and I've been using it really well. But what I've also done is I've actually, for the first time, written a program for myself and put it in True Coach. So I was talking about being disciplined and stuff. What I was finding was I was getting confused about, fuck, what did I do yesterday or what did I do last week or how many reps was it? And I was like, you know what? Just type up a really basic structure and just put it in True Coach. So now I'm just using it on the most basic level of like Monday to Saturday. You know, the structure of each day is like, hey, it's push-pull, it's 3 compound exercises, 2 isolation exercises, this many sets, reps. And there's like no detail in there. It's not even what exercise it is. It's just like a rough rep range. It's not even like specifics. There's no rest times. There's no tempo. There's nothing. Because I kind of like to work in that structure. And that's what I like about True Coach is that it has a really flexible structure. So you can make it as detailed and intricate as possible to the tempo, to the rest periods, to like the exercise and the variations and the scales and the workout demos. You can put all that time in, or you can just use it as something that's just like a really, really basic broad structure and make it really flexible. Because I think that that's some things that people don't like, because they love the flexibility of Excel. They're like, man, I can type anything in there. I can make it perfect. I can do however I want. I can manipulate it. True Coach has that same level of flexibility. Obviously, it's not as flexible as Excel, but it's as flexible as you need it for training. So the more I'm using it now in isolation, the more I'm realizing like this is just one of the best tools you could use around fitness and training, even if you're just using it for your own use. So if you guys are interested, definitely check it out, truecoach.co/MMP. They have a 1-month trial right now. So it was previously a 2-week trial, a 1-month trial. Not many companies give you a 30-day trial of anything. So I would definitely take advantage of this right now, truecoach.co/MMP to get that offer.
Yeah, it's killer. Like we've moved over almost the whole gym onto it now.
Oh, it's amazing. I love it. Okay, cool. So we did end up watching different things. Before I get into this, really struggling with finding a good series. I have found a mad series which people might enjoy. I know there's not a lot of good series out there at the moment. It is called, I think it's Giri Haki. It means honor and shame in Japanese.
Wow.
It's a Netflix series and it's like a crime thriller about it's like a Yakuza-based crime thriller but it's Japanese and it's English. So it's set in London and Tokyo. So it has the, because, you know, I think some people are like, oh, I don't want to just read subtitles the whole time. It does it really nicely. It's got a good mix of both and some really good acting, like actors speaking really good Japanese, but also speaking really good English when they're obviously in London. So Yeah, it's a really, really good show. So there's that show first, because I know you guys need some shows and stuff as well. So far, I've watched three episodes. And yeah, it's like a 4 out of 5 at this stage. And then I did actually watch, so a good friend of ours that he came to the gym for a long time. I think he was a client with us for about 2.5 years now. We just remained really good friends. His name is Desh Miller. His company is This Is 42. They're doing some really exciting things. But one thing that he did I think they filmed it 2 years ago, is he made a documentary with Jay Shapiro, one of his good friends, called Islam and the Future of Tolerance. I think you might be familiar listening to this with a man called Sam Harris. He is one of the main stars of this documentary. And then, I think it's Mira or Maisha or something, or I can't remember the name of the, it's not really the antagonist of the show, but it's basically the dichotomy between Sam Harris and this other guy, and it's their conversation and their dialogue between, so this guy was a reformed Islamic extremist. So he was like part of these like, I guess, terrorist organizations, you could say. This one was more politically driven. So it kind of breaks down the different parties or groups within Islam, and from the extremist level all the way to just like, you know, the Muslim that, you know, barely practices and barely, you know, doesn't pray or whatever. So it breaks down that understanding. But it's a really, really insightful documentary. Anyway, this guy's an extremist reformer. So this was someone who was considering martyrdom and sacrificing his life for the cause and all this stuff, completely reformed, changed his mind. Now he's talking out against that stuff. And so it's obviously a very unique position to be in, to be in that extreme of a group, have that extreme set of beliefs that you would give your life up for, you know, the beliefs and the ideas within Islam, to now talking out sort of against how dangerous it can be, this religion. And Sam Harris, obviously, if you know his work, he wrote a book called The End of Faith, which happened, he started writing it in 9/11, talking about how, you know, we're basically at war with Islam. So they were kind of not enemies, but they weren't friends at the start. And then it's kind of this whole, it's this 90-minute to 2-hour phone conversation that they've had. And it's kind of just an interwoven, that conversation is kind of like, it's stages of that conversation as they debate Islam and whether it's kind of safe or not in modern society and what changes need to be made. Just kind of happens through the whole movie mixed in with some other stuff. It's fantastic. I think that, you know, a lot of us take the view of, oh, it's too hard, it's too difficult, you know, I can't dive into this, I don't have the time to deal with it, you know, it's obviously not good, it's not bad, I don't really know exactly where I sit, but, you know, I'm against terrorists, but I don't know how I feel about Muslims and Islam. Anyway, so this is the perfect documentary for that kind of person, which was me. Like, I would say that, you know, obviously everyone would agree that, you know, terrorism is bad and all this sort of stuff, but didn't know exactly where to sit with Islam. Is it, I don't know enough about the religion. So obviously I know plenty of people, I'm friends with people that are Muslim, and I'm just like, yeah, well, it's fine. It seemed like there's no issue here. They don't have any, I don't have problems with them. They don't have problems with me. We're all, you know, accepting of what everyone believes. But this documentary is making the opposite kind of, it's trying to say, hey, for people like me who don't really know where they sit on it, you need to educate yourself more on it. And we all need to kind of realize that Islam can be a very dangerous religion. At its core and its beliefs. And we do need to challenge people more on it in public. And so it's kind of an uncomfortable documentary, but very eye-opening documentary. And I think that you should definitely give it a watch. It's on Amazon Prime. That's where you get it. So if you've got the Amazon Prime subscription, which is $6 a month or whatever, it's free. So you can go download it. It's Islam and the Future of Tolerance. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
I don't know if you're saying, but the coolest thing about Amazon Prime is how no matter where you are in a show or a movie, it tells you the actors that are on the screen. Have you seen that?
No.
So if you're watching Amazon Prime, say you're watching like, I don't know, Seinfeld or some shit, right?
Okay, yeah.
There'll be like some scene and they're in like a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And if you just like press the screen, it has face recognition technology. So it'll just be able to tell you all the different actors down the left-hand side that are in it, really? All the way to like the extras. Like there'll be someone in the lift and it'll just bring up like, oh, this guy like some extra and he's, you know, these are the different movies he's been in. Yeah, apparently they use face recognition technology, so that it just brings up like, I think their IMDb profile on the left-hand side of the screen on Amazon Prime, which is pretty sick.
Yeah.
I haven't watched much, been pretty busy with the baby. The only thing I have watched is the extra episode they released on the Tiger King series.
Yeah.
They released like an 8th episode where he just basically interviews all the people that are not in jail at the end of the documentary. Not Carol Baskin, not the one that killed her husband. Basically everybody else. It is pretty boring, I have to say. I mean, it's very low budget. It's basically him on a Zoom call with a bunch of people. The only thing I would take away from watching it is really just guns are so dangerous. I didn't realize in watching the documentary
just that, realized.
Man, he didn't mean to kill himself with the gun. I thought it was like a suicide in the movie.
Right.
His partner, the young partner that shoots himself in the documentary.
Oh, he didn't mean to shoot himself.
He didn't mean to shoot himself. So, the guy that was in the room with him...
Yeah, I remember the footage.
...explained the situation.
Yeah.
And he was like... I mean, you think he was on drugs and he probably wasn't, you know, quite with it. But he was like, oh, you know, this gun doesn't shoot unless it has a clip in it. I know nothing about guns, right?
Right.
And to prove it, he held it up to his head and shot it. But it did have a clip in it.
Shit.
And he said... Because he described it on the
thing.
This
gun doesn't kill people if it's got bullets in it.
He's like, if it doesn't fire, it doesn't have a clip in it. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And he held it up to his head to prove it, fires it. And he said that, like, you could see it in his face. Like, the moments before he died, he's like, oh, fuck. It has a clip in it.
What do you mean the moments before he dies? It's too late. He realized he was dead.
Yeah, like, the way the guy describes it as he's watching it, is he's like, you could see the surprise in his face. And then he died.
How the fuck could you not have any surprise in your face? I don't know. Instant you find out you're dead. I don't know.
I've never seen someone shoot themselves. But
they wouldn't know. It doesn't make any sense.
The point was, I think he shot himself in the head and there was this, like, brief moment before he was, like, officially dead.
Well, okay, so the only way that would know, I guess, is if as he was pulling the trigger midway through, a sound happened, which is the sound of like, okay, there's a bullet in here.
I think there might be an instant before like you're dead.
Maybe there's
that you hear the loud bang.
But that would have to be like an absolute microsecond.
Yeah, microsecond of time.
No, but it would. Yeah, but that's the only thing logically that could happen is like you pull the trigger, it's half squeezed, and you're like, oh my God, I'm almost at full squeeze, and I can tell now from that sound, because you can't see it, right? If it's in his head, oh, it's loaded. I'm about to die.
I think it might be a feeling. Yeah. I don't know how exactly quickly the bullet comes out of a gun. But
instant.
Anyway,
I would instant. Say... instant. Like... it would be the sound. It'd have to be the sound. It'd be the only way.
I would say that moment of that eighth episode is probably worth actually watching the whole thing for.
I'll watch it. Sorry. Just to come back to Islam, the Future of Tolerance. The guy... So, it's Sam Harris and Majid Nawaz. That's the
it's on the Amazon British Prime. That's the easy place
on Amazon
together.
Prime, yeah. It's a documentary. Yeah. Definitely go check it out. Awesome. Last thing we'll do is obviously extended screen use is seriously concerning. A lot of our coaches have jumped on board the blue light blocking bandwagon. Last week on my daily emails, I talked about the Sleep Trio Tranquilizer. That is the combination of True ZMA, Peak Rest, and the blue light blockers from Blue Blocks, and it's been, I call it the sleep tranquilizer because I can't make it to 10 p.m. Like once that gets in my system and the blue light blockers are on, like it's absolutely dramatic. You know, it's been interesting. Ev, she wanted to wear my blue light blockers because she's got my old pair on and she's like, oh, let me try the new ones. And she tried the new ones and she's like, oh my God, then they're so different.
Yeah.
She's like, I can't see any colors. I was like, yeah. She's like, wow, these ones clearly don't work. These new ones clearly do. And so she went and she bought herself a nighttime pair because she just realized, hey, you know, a few people mentioned that, oh yeah, I got the blue light blockers. I got some cheap ones on Amazon. I'm like, it's no point. It's no point. They're not working. They're not tested. So there's only very few companies that you can trust that actually have put the technology in their lenses. And price is obviously a good indicator to reflect that. But you know, we've specifically gone and scrutinized this company and said, show us lab results, and they've proven it. And so you want to get, if you're using daytime ones, I think they're, you know, absolutely essential. But nighttime ones as well. You know, you're expecting to go to sleep. You're spending money. You want to like make sure you're looking after your health and your sleep and your eye health. Definitely check out Blue Blocks. Definitely check them out. Especially the daytime ones, you know.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard the episode yet, regardless of whether you get the glasses, Andy Mount's episode on Monday was really good. There is a lot to learn about light in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely check that out, guys. Andy Mount was on Monday shows. Probably one of the best alternative health shows we've had in a long time.
Long time.
So definitely check it out. And then if you're interested in that company, Blue Blocks, BlueBlox.com. Our code is MMP. Gets you 15% off. Every sponsor we've talked about today is in the notes of the episode. And then finally, guys, the survey. If you can fill that out for us, be incredible. You get it. You're into the chance to win one of five $100 gift vouchers to any of our partners. So that would pay for your blue light blockers if you answer that survey, or a new batch of True Protein, or you know, True Coach subscription, whatever you want to do. So the mymuscleproject.com/survey, you can check that out there. And then, finally, we have a review of the week. So thank you to Carter G9 from America. He writes, winsome bro nerds. And then just briefly, there's some other stuff in there. He writes a lot of stuff, but he loves to enjoy listening to us and our company with his morning coffee. So we're glad, Carter, that we could enjoy the best drink in the world with you every morning. So guys, Carter, all you have to do is message us in orders@themymuscleproject.com. We'll give you a free training program and a free training journal. And that's everything from us this week, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.